Okay, the format for this 55-minute meeting session is as follows. A short reading, then I will share 10 to 15 minutes followed by open sharing. Again, the topic for this special focus session is recovering your creativity in OA, writers, artists, actors. The following reading is a reading from For Today, June 23rd, page 175. A small daily task, if it be really daily, will beat the labors of a spasmodic Hercules, Anthony Trollope. What's the secret of digging a garden, writing a novel, taking a fourth step inventory, abstaining from compulsive overeating? OA gave me the answer. Attend to the business at hand each day, one day at a time. I used to think the only way to tackle major projects was in great bursts of concerted effort. Like a child with a short attention span, I would tire myself out with the intensity and sporadic effort and then go on to something else. Today, I still tend to see a difficult task in terms of the total time and effort it will take. But there is one lesson I have learned well. The only time I have to abstain and practice the program of recovery is today. For today, it is this day's abstinence that guarantees me continued sanity and freedom, nothing else. I will now share my experience, strength, and hope on the topic. Is there a timer? Or can someone please time? Sure. 15. So just 10 and 5. All right, hi, I'm David. I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic. Thank you for asking me to stand up, because that's not what I want to do. I was just talking to Jill before the meeting, and, you know, she reminded me how hard it is for people like us to want to be seen. And, you know, my grandma just died a couple days ago, and I just flew back to New York for the funeral, and I took a red eye, and I just got back yesterday, and I'm not feeling completely connected. And I spoke at a meeting earlier, and I didn't feel completely connected, and I didn't feel like I had, you know, recovery to offer. And part of my disease is humbling myself enough to remember that I don't have to save the planet. I can just show up and share my experience, strength, and hope, and be seen, you know. So there are two sides of my disease. One is I want to be invisible, and the other is I want to be Mr. Recovery. And, you know, growing up, I come from a very alcoholic, abusive household. You know, the first memory I have of childhood, my dad was this big 300-plus-pound obese guy, and he threw my sister up against the wall, and he was grabbing her by the chin. He was calling her a fat effing pig, and I remember jumping on his back, like trying to pry him off her and like screaming at him and begging him to get off her, and he grabbed me by the shirt and threw me up against the wall, and I remember looking across the hallway at my mom and just like begging for her and pleading for her to help us. And she went into her room and closed the door. And I don't say that to blame my disease on my parents, but, you know, it says in this literature that we have instincts for a purpose. And, you know, as an addict, I had a completely warped instinct for security at such a young age. And like it says here, you know, when they far exceed their natural purpose, our greatest natural assets turn into liabilities. And my instinct for security to just feel like I was okay wasn't met. In my opinion, it wasn't met. So I went for something outside of me to make me feel like I was okay. And I went to the food when my parents got divorced. And, you know, I used to have this physical fear that my dad was going to come to my house and take me and hurt me. And I had this emotional pain that my mom wasn't there to protect me. So the food was my solution. And, you know, the food became my mom, and the food became my dad, and the food became my God, and thank God for the food. But I was 60 pounds overweight all through childhood, and, you know, all the kids made fun of me. I was the fat kid in school. People would sing songs about me. People would throw rocks at me. Like, the incomprehensible demoralization of being the fat kid in school, it's where I get the wanting to be invisible. You know, I remember just going to school and the pain. You know, there's this one girl who always would just call me out and for being fat. and, you know, I just didn't want to be seen, but I was seen. You know, I wared my disease on my clothes, you know. So I'd go home and I ate over it. And I'd eat over the pain that people were making fun of me, and I would eat over the pain that I was eating over the pain, and I would eat over the loneliness. I was just tortured by loneliness. I felt so alone. I felt like a lost child in an airport. And I just read this laboratory study with cocaine, with addicts. I don't know if anyone read this, but if you put a rat in a cage alone, and you put cocaine and a bottle of water in the cage with the rat, if the rat's alone, he's going to go to the cocaine. But if you put other rats in the cage with the rat, if you put other rats in the cage, he's going to go to the water. And it's the whole thing is like, when I'm alone, I go to the thing that's unhealthy for me. But when I'm feeling like I'm secure, I go to the healthy thing. But I felt so alone, and, you know, my instinct for security just kept getting warped and warped and warped and warped. And, you know, I ended up in Manhattan when I hit my bottom. I was going from the Whole Foods on the Lower East Side to the one in Union Square to the one in Midtown to the one in the Upper West Side, binging, 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 binging all day long. And I'd take the subway down to my 24-hour gym, and I'd exercise it for 5-6 hours a night. And I was taking 15 pills of hydroxycut every day, and I would take half a bottle of NyQuil every night. And I was failing out of college. I hadn't spoken to my dad in 10 years. Nobody knew where I was. I couldn't show up for commitments. I didn't have any friends. I'd never had a girlfriend. Like, I didn't have anything to live for. And, you know, I always had this talent of writing. Like, I inherently, people always said, like, you know, I always stood out as a writer, but I can never put it to good use because I was always, you know, I wanted to be Jack Kerouac. I wanted to write the book in a week and then get famous for it. I never wanted to put in the work. I never could put in the work because my disease just took me out of life. I couldn't show up for life. You know, I didn't want to fail out of school, but I couldn't show up for life because my disease was so strong. And when I came into OA, I realized that it wasn't about the food, you know. It is about the food, but it's not about the food. You know, I've been abstinent for 4 years from, you know, binging, purging, flour and sugar. And, you know, the most important thing for me was realizing that when I put flour and sugar inside my body, I turn into an alcoholic and I can't stop eating it. But the next part of step one, that my life is unmanageable, that's talking about my thought life. It's talking about the fact that I have a mind that tells me to go to the food even though the food is killing me, and I listen to it. You know, time and time and time and time again, if a normal person is allergic to grapes and it makes them break out, they just don't eat grapes. But I have a mind that tells me that the food is actually going to save my life, but it's killing me. And if the mind is going to lie to me about the food, it's probably going to lie to me about every single area of my life. I'm not good enough. I shouldn't go out for that job. I shouldn't write that thing. And I found myself, you know, once I came into program, you know, when I was in college, I was on track to go into law school. And I never wanted to be a lawyer, but my mind told me that if I can get that, and if I can get the degree, and if I can get the job, and if I can get the house, and the car, and the thing, and the fill in the blank, then you guys will like me. And when I came into program and got abstinent and started working the steps, my mind started changing. My thoughts started changing. I started to get that psychic change that the big book talks about. And I started to stop living from here and start living from here. And I realized that in my heart, I had guidance. You know, when I quieted my mind enough, I had, you know, guidance in my heart that showed me where to go. And, you know, so I was on track to go to law school, and I got abstinent, and I heard the thought one day, you know, apply to grad school in Los Angeles and for screenwriting at the UCLA screenwriting program. And then my mind took over, like, you're never going to get in. You know, they say it's harder to get into than Harvard Business School. And, you know, my mind kept saying, you're not good enough, you know, you're never going to make it. Just keep going to law school, you know, you're going to be okay. And, you know, I kept feeling in my heart, like, just apply to grad school at UCLA. And I moved out to LA for a summer, and I was interning. And at the lady who I was interning with, she said, you know, what's your, like, what do you want to do? What's your vision for yourself? And I said, well, I want to go to UCLA. And it was the first time I ever, like, stated my vision. And she said, wow, I'm actually on the board of, like, the executive board of the film school. Tell me when you apply, and I'll make a call. And I got into UCLA. I was the youngest person ever to get into the program. I was failing out of college when I got into UCLA film school. Failing out of college. I had to lie my way into getting a degree, an undergraduate degree, so I could graduate and then move out to LA and get into UCLA. And now I'm in UCLA, and my mind's talking to me again. You know, I'm the youngest person there, and it's saying I'm not good enough. And it's talking to me, and it's talking to me, and it's talking to me. And one day at a time, like that reading said, I just showed up, and I asked God for help, and I asked God to speak through me. God, can you speak through me in the classroom? Can you write through me when I sit down and write, you know, a page? Can you help me write a page today? Can you help me read the script tonight? And I started bringing God into every single area of my job in school, in graduate school. And they said at the time, you know, you got to network. Just keep networking. If you want to make it in this industry, just network, network, network. Get a business card. Give it out. And I kept hearing in my heart, just keep going to meetings. And, you know, I started going to the Hill Street meetings in Santa Monica. And for 2 years straight, I went to a meeting probably every day. Didn't network once. And when it became time to graduate, this was 2 years ago, I started freaking out because I didn't have a job. And I'm applying, like, everywhere I'm applying, and I couldn't get a job anywhere. So I started going to rehabs and applying at rehabs, and I couldn't get a job there. I couldn't get a job at Starbucks. Five left. I couldn't get a job anywhere. And, you know, my sponsor at the time said, just, you know, keep your contacts in order, and when your own house is in order, Providence will provide. So I kept going to meetings. I kept working with others. And then the day I graduated, out of nowhere, someone emailed me asking, and the subject line was job, ? So I started working for him, and every single day I would get on my knees before I went in, and I would just say, God, can you help me be of service? Can you help me be of service? And, you know, my dream was always to be a writer on a TV show. And, you know, for a year I worked for him, and then he moved on to a show and brought me with him. And then I worked my way up. I know I'm breaking my anonymity, but it's an artist meeting. And, you know, I just wrote my first episode of TV, and it's going to air in March. And it's like, it's not me at all. You know, it's when I get out of the way, when I stop listening to my mind, you know, I get to show up for life in a way that I never, ever, ever could have imagined. And all those people in grad school who are networking and who are doing the deal, like, they're not working where I'm working right now. You know, I'm on a different plane of existence. When I bring a higher power into all of my affairs, my life is truly beyond my wildest dreams. I never would have imagined I'd be where I'm at right now. You know, 5 years ago I was failing out of college, and now I'm like writing on a TV show. It's beyond my wildest dreams. But I still have that mind that tells me that I'm not good enough. You know, I still have that mind that tells me people aren't going to watch the show. Or, you know, I go on Facebook and they say, well, your friend is working on that. You know, why aren't you on that? And it's just always comparing and despairing and you trying to take me out of life. And, you know, that's really why I need to work steps 10, 11, and 12 in the day that I'm in. Like, where is my mind lying to me? Where is my mind telling me that I'm not good enough? Where is my mind driven by fear? And then going to God, God, can you protect me from my mind? Can you help me show up at work today? Can you just help me be of service? And then going to work and trying to be of service. And not many people in the TV or film industry go to work trying to be of service. But when you do that, miracles happen. And, you know, I'm just provided for. And I have everything that I ever could have wanted. And I know that if I don't keep working program, if I don't keep giving away what I've been given, it's going to be taken. You know, there's a spiritual teacher, and he says, everything that you've been given in whatever capacity that you've been given has been given to you so that you can give it away. And if I try to hoard it, if I try to hold on to it, it's just going to disappear. Like the way this energy in the universe works, I just have to keep giving and keep getting and keep giving and keep getting. And, you know, it's all because of program. You know, I owe my life to this program. I owe my career to this program. And my abstinence is the most important thing without exception. You know, I work in a room with eight other people, you know, 80 hours a week. And food is catered every meal, Dunkin' Donuts all day long. And it's like I eat my three meals. And, you know, I celebrated a belly button birthday in August. And, you know, the thing on our show was they would bring donuts for everyone and everyone would celebrate. They brought me a bowl of hummus and put a candle in it. And it's like, I don't have to change my program just because other people want me to. You know, when I just show up for life, you know, life takes care of itself around me. And, you know, that's the life I have today. You know, people give me bowls of hummus with candles on it. And, you know, I can't say enough that it's all a result of program, because when I came into program, I was selfish, I was self-centered, and it was all about me. And I didn't realize that having, you know, the attitude of taking and me got me nothing. And it's only by working the steps and getting out of my mind and getting into my heart and making it about service and making my life about giving that I get. And, you know, I think my time is, like, wrapping up. So thank you guys so much. I'm excited to hear you. The meeting is now open for 3-minute pitches. Please focus your share on the topic and limit your sharing to 3 minutes and give others a chance to share. The session will end at 2:55 p.m. Who would like to share first? Diane.
Welcome to everybody. We're glad you're here, and welcome especially to newcomers. I am so moved by your share. In the middle of your grief, you show up. You're the show-up kid, you know, and I've seen it over the years, and I'm so grateful for it. I came into program and got abstinent in 1987, and I'll talk about the creativity aspect. At the time, I had... my mother suicided when I was 17, which kicked off another level of eating issues. And I put myself through college and graduate school, got a great job, moved down to the States, and binged my way through graduate school, the job. I have this unbelievable degree, one of those ones that's supposed to be the hardest one to get into. Didn't remember a thing I learned because I was eating. And I got abstinent, by the grace of God, 6 months before my drop-dead date to kill myself. And once I was abstinent, I realized I hated what I was doing. I was the only woman in this whole world of financial... I was doing petroleum lending, for God's sakes, in the 80s when there were no women, and I hated it. And I thought, this isn't going to work. I'll kill myself if I have to keep doing this. And I thought, I saw a movie called Ordinary People, and I couldn't stop crying. It was the first time I cried about my mother's suicide was watching that movie. And I thought, if movies can do that, if storytelling can do that, I want that. And it took me, I had a sponsor, I did the networking because I didn't know anybody in the business. I called anybody and everybody I could think of. If they said, go meet so-and-so, I went and met them. And in the end, my first job offer, when I was making like $40,000 a year in a normal job, I was offered $300 a week to work on a movie with my great graduate degree, because I had taken my graduate degree off my resume because nobody would hire me. They said, you're overqualified. But I don't care. I want this. I got the job. I kept the job. I showed up every day. I showed up upset. I showed up in tears. I showed up angry. I ran in the bathroom. I didn't know what I was doing. I called people for help because the program taught me that. And I did really well in that career. And I love it to this day. I don't regret it for a second. And it's the program that taught me that I'm allowed to do what I love to do. I'm allowed to make changes in my life. I'm allowed to have a life that's happy, joyous, and free. And it's the abstinence and the sponsor and the showing up in the grief and in the honesty of what it is I really want. And also surrounding myself with people in program who support me, who say, go for it. and who also can help me with reality checks. And it's that world. I more than anything wanted to acknowledge you in your recovery and just to thank everybody for being here and for showing up for your recovery. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jill, a compulsive overeater and a 100-pounder. Hi, everyone. Thank you, David. I want to say again that I adore you. 3 minutes. What do I want to say in 3 minutes? I have so much to say on this, and I was so excited to see it on the list of meetings today. Just to qualify super briefly, 8 years of abstinence, came into the rooms at 327 pounds, maintaining 160-pound weight loss, and all I do is show up. That's all I do is show up. So that being said, I was in a job for 15 years that when I was 327 pounds, it fit me. It worked for me. But I found that as I growed spiritually in my program and my recovery, that job no longer worked for me. In fact, I became miserable at that job. So I remember I was right around the 11th step, coincidentally, at the same time. And I remember talking to my sponsor about, you know, why am I still in this job that doesn't serve me anymore? What am I still getting out of this job? Why can't I leave it? I made a boatload of money at that job, and it doesn't bring me joy anymore, but yet I'm still there. So I remember saying to her that, you know, I need a counselor. I need a therapist. I need a guru. I need to find some religion. I need to find out why I'm still at this job. And she said, you can do all that or you can work the steps. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I really, here's the truth. I was talking to him in a meeting and bitching and moaning about my boss and how horrible he was. And a fellow came up to me afterwards and she said, maybe write a 4-step on that. And my head about popped off my shoulders because what I wanted to say was, I have no part in this. I have no responsibility in this. It's all my boss's fault because he's mean. And, you know, and I knew when I had a charge, because I didn't even let her finish that statement, that there was such a charge in it, my head was about going to pop off my shoulders, that I went home, you know, and as was already talked about, God speaks through other people for me. So when I wrote about my boss, I clearly saw that my disease is my reaction and my behavior. And I behaved and reacted to him as if he was my father. And that was the tie-in, and that was the connection. And it wasn't until I did that work around that, and I worked the steps around that, and I swear to God, like 2 days later, I was fired from that job. And I got a huge severance package, paid in full wages for a year. I went to live, I went to live in Paris for a month, and the big takeaway from that is that God is my employer today. Thank you.
Jackie, compulsive reader.
Hi, Jackie.
Grateful to be here today. Thank you for sharing with us. I guess I can qualify as well. I'll have 4 years of abstinence on the 28th of February, and I've given away 200 pounds. And I'm only 28 years old. It's so cool. And it's only because of this program, you guys. And anyway, I've been in this program for just a little bit, and I'm at a point in my recovery where, you know, I have a part-time job, I have a lot of friends, I go to a lot of meetings, and life's, you know, it's pretty good, but I have this feeling that it could be better, you know? And I've lived in a lot of fear in my life, and my bottom was really sad. I was by myself. I didn't leave my house. I had no future goals. I was lucky to wake up in the morning and be alive, you know? I didn't feel like I was at the time, but... I really had no desire to live, and I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. And I've always been a creative, excited person, but when the food overtook me, I kind of lost to that person, and I had no belief in myself. And I listened to my head, you know, I listened to my head that told me I sucked, that nobody loved me, that nobody wanted to hear me. Nobody Accepts Me, and I listened to that and like went to the food and got to 400 pounds and just, you know, shut life out. I'm grateful that's not my life today, but I don't believe sometimes that it could be better. But I decided one day that why not, you know, I didn't think my life could be better. I didn't think my life could be as better as it was before. So I decided to apply to grad school to follow my dream of being a reporter. And I didn't think that anyone would want to see me on television, but whatever, I don't know, you know. I didn't know that I'd be the person I am today. I also, so I got an interview, one of the best schools that I wanted to go to, and that's not my life. Like, that's stuff like that doesn't happen to me. That's my higher power. That's me doing the footwork. That's me picking up the phone. That's me, or that's God helping me pick up the phone. That's God helping me apply online and, like, every second of the application process, I was like, no, I can't do this. No, I can't do this. No, I can't do this. No, you can't do this. And I just stopped listening to my head and I just did it. And I don't know what's going to happen in my future, but I know that as long as I rely on God and this program, that I could have an amazing life and follow my dreams and, you know, do whatever. I can do anything. I'm auditioning for The Voice next weekend to be on television. I'm going to come back here. Why not? Right? I don't know if I'm a good singer, but let's find out, okay? So I'm just grateful for this program. Thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Dina, compulsive overeater and anorexic. Thank you, David. That was such a marvelous story, just very moving. And I'm also a writer, and it's taken... I'm pretty old, and it's taken me most of my life just to feel comfortable saying that. And from the moment I was born, I was a writer. You know, you're born into these things. And I think what happened was my parents were both very smart, and my dad was an aerospace engineer. So growing up, I got the idea that because I'm a creative and my type of intelligence doesn't work the way his did, I devalued my own, and I thought I was stupid. I thought I was a dummy. I thought I was defective. Nothing I did was ever good enough. And part of the way that manifested was there was something wrong with my body. I was not only was I dumb, I was ugly. I hurt the people I loved, and so the self-loathing is something that I struggled with from a very early age. And I got further and further away from actually admitting that writing was what I wanted to do with my life, so I would pick all these other things to do. And I ended up with these really, really dumb jobs, and I became really good at doing things that I hated. And I was just miserable, and I was suicidal most of the time. And and the eating disease didn't start showing up until I was a young adult, and then it became progressively worse. By then, I had children, and I was doing all these other things, and I just felt like I was growing further and further away from doing what I was brought onto this earth to do, and it was a pretty crappy feeling. In the meantime, I was going back and forth between binging and starving myself, and I really do think that one of the starvation phases, I did damage to my brain. I mean, I really think that I lost a lot of the connections that I used to have. So anyway, my point is that my therapist said, you need to go to OA. And I'm like, I don't understand. You know, I'm like really skinny right now. Hello. And he said, no. And he specializes in eating disorders and addictions. He said, just try it once. You know, so I went to be able to prove to him that he was wrong and no one's the boss of me, you know, because I'm very stubborn. And I knew as soon as I walked in that this was the place I belonged, and was like, how come I didn't have this when I was really young? This is my family in a way that's, you know, that no one's been my family before. And because of this, I never could have foreseen that what once seemed so overwhelming of me rediscovering my creativity and not judging myself and not criticizing myself, I can actually get back to that. And so I'm just really excited to be able to do that because, you know, I don't have to play God anymore. You know, I can just accept the gifts of the program and owe it all to my higher power.
I'm Charlotte, compulsive overeater. Thank you, David. I thought, oh, I'll come hear you speak. Or, you know, love you. You're adorable. And then I thought it was, it said creativity in the way. So I thought it was like how to work the program in a creative way. And then I'm thinking, what am I doing here? I don't really belong here. And then I thought, wait a second, I did write a book. So and it got published by a publisher. Maybe I am a writer. I mean, my profession where I actually make money is not that, but it was related to my profession. And I'm actually working on another book now. So maybe this is a good place. And I remember when I was writing the book, the first book, I was not in OA, but I had a meditation practice, and I found that when my head was trying to do it, all I was doing is, this is shit, you don't know anything, you have nothing to share, and then I would get myself to write like a chapter by saying, it's okay if it's shit, and then, you know, after you rewrite it 20 or 30 times, it does sound better. So, but if I sat and I meditated for a little bit, and then saw what wanted to come out, it came out better. So I'm hoping, this is like a great reminder, because I'm a little stuck now in my OA program and in writing and in my life, but I could do that. I could just meditate and ask God to speak through me. So that's so inspirational. It's just amazing. And also, I'm sort of an artist. Now, when I was back in college, I majored in art in the profession I'm in now, but one of my teachers said, made fun of one of my paintings. Like, I was trying to do something very strange, and he said, why don't you just do a tree or something? So that turned me off from painting for many, many years. And then last year, I did a painting, and it was like, oh, I like this. So I bought all these paints because I thought I was going to paint with my boyfriend who's no longer here, and I'm blaming him for the weight I put on. Excuse me, God. But okay, so, but I haven't painted. So now I'm thinking, I'm going to take a class, and this is really inspiring me to kind of get in touch with that, and then just, so thank you. So I guess I was meant to be here, and thank you so much.
Hi, everyone. My name is Elizabeth, and I am a compulsive overeater. And a crier. And I haven't cried in a long time. Thank you so much. And for all the shares, my first thought when I saw this topic on the program was, my first thought was, outside issue, which of course means I should go on to the second thought, which is, what are you so afraid of, Elizabeth? That's what I've learned in 25 years of Overeaters Anonymous is go on to the next thought. And don't necessarily act on the first one. This is big, and it's always been big. And I knew after my eighth day in OA that the creativity is very big in me. And I've always been creative. I've always been expressive. And I've always been blocked. And, you know, I taught myself how to play the piano because that's what I thought people ought to do. If you need lessons, it's because if you're talented, you don't need lessons. I have a lot of old ideas, lots of old ideas. Talented people don't need lessons. So I sat down with an Encyclopedia Britannica when I was 12 years old. So, because that's what I thought you ought to be able to do. At any rate, I've been a singer and an actor, and the show closed on Broadway when I was 23 years old, and I never went on an audition after that. It closed after a day, and so that was that. And I've done a lot of performing and sharing of my gift in service, a lot in OA, outside of OA charity. And I have a lot of ideas, and I have ideas all the time. And it's not a confidence issue. I mean, I think I clearly have a lot to learn. I probably ought to take a class. I thank you so much. Thank you. And I footwork and willingness. I also have old ideas about, I have historically caught on things very quickly and very easily. And so I think if you're really talented, if you're really gifted, if it's really God's will, it ought to be easy and effortless. And it ought not be a struggle. And on the other hand, I've been very attached to struggle. I've worked, I've been a, you know, self-supporting through my own contributions all of my adult life in jobs that have not been my right work, and struggled, you know. So there's this attachment to struggle. I've got a lot of issues. But I admire the willingness, the trust. That's what I want to say. What I heard today was, gosh, I admire the trust that you all who have shared so far have, that I seem to lack, and I pray for. Thank you very much.
I am Lauren, compulsive overeater. Thank you so much, David.
This is on. Do I need to use this?
Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you so much. I really get so much out of when I hear you share. I'm so reticent to come up. About 6 years ago, I wrote 4 books and sold 3,500 copies of them. And they were on a very specialized topic in education that I was working in. And I have another collection of stories that I'm going to be putting on Amazon in about a month. And I never knew that I was a writer until I came into program. I never wrote. My older brother and sister, they wrote. They were artistic. They did things like that, and I read. And so I never really knew that I wrote until I came into program, and I had to start writing. And it was really a very special gift. And I have had a really hard time filing a copyright, going and getting a DBA, getting it edited, you know, all of these things. And I've resisted it. I mean, sometimes a year would go by when I hadn't done anything. Didn't mean I wasn't obsessing it with it. And I finally just stopped trying to ask why, and I started bookending. And I also just got fed up and just sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I just did it. And December 31st, I went and I got my name from the court, wherever you go to get, you know, file your DBA. I did it on December 31st, and the woman who was there was born on the same day. She was so excited to help me. She and I shared the same birthday. But I am so grateful to program. I never would have known this side of myself if it hadn't been for program. It totally shocked me and has given me, taken me so far in this part of my life. And if I ignore my creativity, it's like, it's soul food for me. I can't. It's like soul food for me. And, biggest supporters and people who ask me, how's it going? How's it going? What are you doing? Where are you at now? Come from family and also from my OA family. And I'm really, really grateful for that. Thank you.
Hi. Oops. My name is Wanda. I'm a compulsive overeater. I've been in the program just 2 years. I've given away 80 pounds. I have this split brain. I am a bookkeeper, so I'm like, cross your T's, dot your I's, everything matches. And then I have this very creative side. My struggle right now is that I have creativity ADD. And what it said in the book about, you know, spurts of creativity and obsessing, and that's kind of where I am. I have jobs that are very analytical to provide for my family. I'm a single mom of 2 teenage boys. But I have, excuse me, this passion for creativity. I want to learn everything. I want to do everything. And I don't know why I'm so emotional. One of the things I'm learning in this conference is that I have to give this to God. I have to give this gift he's given me and help him show me what I should do with it. I'm so in awe of people that have taken that and followed it to its fruition. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with mine. I know it's here. So anyway, I just want to share that. Thanks for letting me share.
Hi, Adrienne over at Bulimic. I'm so sorry I was late. I just love to hear whenever you open your mouth. I'm so sorry for whatever it is that you're going through. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I've been an interior designer, and I was very successful with that. And then I was an actor, and I'm obviously not famous, but I, you know, was making six figures a year, and I did that for a bunch of years until I got really fat when I got pregnant, and then I lost the weight, and I've put it back on, being in relapse. And it's so funny because I don't have a problem standing up in these rooms and talking, and this topic makes me so nervous. I've kind of like reacquainted myself with my agents and kind of started going out again. It's not really what I want to do. And yet when I do it, I love it. It's really fun to get paid and be able to play. And then I'm thinking of like, oh, well, maybe I'll get a real estate license because what I really want to do is make a lot of money. And then I go, what I really want to do is be in the fashion business. And yet I kind of belittle it and look down on it. Like, I don't think it's that important and it's not really helping people. And so I really don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And I'm telling you, I think it's why I was a drug addict for so many years and have dealt with my bulimia for so many years, because I don't want to be clear and healed enough to deal with this topic. And then I also feel, you know, as a mom and a wife, and that where is that all going to fit in? You know what I mean? How am I going to make that move? And I have these daydreams of, like, sitting at my dining room table with a sewing machine, and what the fuck is it that I'm making? And then I have, like, a bin of all these old cashmere sweaters that are up in the attic, and I think, don't throw them away because you'll turn them into something. And then I go, well, what am I going to do with that? And somebody else was sharing previously about the split mind. I am. I'm like a braino and very organized and have no problem with running businesses, which I've done. And yet on the other side is this passion to do something creative, and yet I belittle it. And I think that it's not that important. So anyway, very scary subject, and grateful that we're here to discuss it, and I'm so getting so much out of hearing all of you share. Thank you so much.
I'm Pam, compulsive overeater. Hi, Pam. And thank you so much for sharing. It's really good to hear how God works in your life. And in everyone else's too. It's like inspiring to me so much. My whole career was spent until I got disabled, which I'm right now, doing accounting, being the controller of companies and all that kind of stuff. I spent some time doing some creative things, making jewelry, selling, doing stuff like that, but I just had to put all that to the side when I was, you know, I was a single mom taking care of my son. He had to come first. You know, I had to, you know, put food on the table, all that crap for me. And just ignoring that a lot for me and not really thinking, you know, since I was a little girl, I always wanted to be a writer. And yet I have people around me who are being writers or in my life. And I think I'm not as good as they are, you know, so I don't deserve to do that. And I've been in this program a really long time. Well, long time for me. Other people have been in longer, since 83. And I've got 14 years of, not 14 years, four, six, a year and a half of current abstinence. been in this program over 30-something years. And it's just this time when I'm really looking at a lot of stuff, and I've been off of work because I've had all this neck and back stuff, that I'm not on the computer because I can't be. It hurts my neck. It hurts my arm. I just can't be doing that. And I just think about other things, and I just like go poo-poo them away because, you know, I'm not good enough to do that. I can't even try and fail. So just being here has really given me a lot of hope that maybe I should, you know, just put it out there. I don't know what I'm going to be. I'm 55 years old, and I don't know where God's going to lead me. But that's where I want to go, and I really, really love this program and know it's the only way for me. Thanks.
My name is Fred, and I'm a compulsive overeater. It's a great topic. Thank you for your share. That was really, really awesome to hear the details of your relationship with God. And just really, really, really beautiful. This is a sketchy topic for me, too. I'm a creative person. It's scary. My creative dreams weren't realized as a result of the disease knocking me out. And I have progressed in some really beautiful ways. I mean, I make a living writing, but it's not exactly the kind of writing that I dreamed of. I mean, I write stuff for lawyers, you know, to put their name on it and send it to the court, and, you know. So that I'm doing. But the thing is, how I've progressed in recovery is that I play music, and I had, like I said, I knocked that out. I'm a multi-addicted, and I was always a failure, and I always went to the disease instead of being able to progress with it. And right now I'm playing in two bands, but one of them is a recovery band. Everybody's in recovery, and we get together once a week. And it's like a musical 12-step meeting at my place. And it's been really, really good and real positive to see the others grow and to see me grow. And we played at a 12-step convention last fall. And it was really, really good because I am pretty shy person, and I'm not the kind of a person that'll come out and sing publicly. But I had a lot of people that go to meetings, but they heard me sing it. They went, "Wow, you know, that came out of you." It's like, you know. So that I'm really, really glad about, and it's the grace of God that is helping me connect to that, and I'm really, really, really pleased with it, you know, I'm really glad to be here, abstinent. I had just come through some pretty, I think, serious struggles with the food, and I'm glad to be abstinent. I'm working with, I'm picking up the tools of recovery. One of the things that's kind of helping me get out of it is I'm back to journaling. I'm writing journaling again. It's one of our tools. I'm committed to 3 outreach calls a day. That's hard for me. I just, you know, but I'm doing it, and it's working, and I've committed with my sponsor to go through the steps, and he's guiding me in a really beautiful, loving OA sponsor way that is helping me. And so I just wanted to share that, and I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be in. Thank you again, David, for your beautiful pitch.
We have time for 1 minute burning desire. Okay. It's now time to close the session. I would like to thank
those of you who gave service, and all of you for attending. After a moment of silence, please join hands as we close with the OA promises. I put my hand in yours. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend upon our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding.
That's right, yeah.
Jill, where are you going?
I'm not sure. What are you doing?
I was gonna follow you.
Oh, okay. Should I just miss you guys?
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, I've met you before. I've met you before.
Where?
Hi, how are you? I'm following.
You probably wouldn't recognize me.
Not officially. Hi, how are you? Did I just miss you?
Wow.
Awesome.
I think I had your phone number.
You look adorable.
Thanks for your share.
Thank you. And if I can I of course.
Yeah.
What part of you live in?
Los Feliz.
Oh, Los Feliz. Okay. I'm actually speaking there for a meeting.
Wait, what are we?
My county.
Today is 1:24:15. I just broke out and I'm like,